Welcome to Soul of an Empath, the podcast that helps empaths to feel loved, seen, heard, and understood in all areas of your life. Now here's your host, Tiffany Cano.
Welcome back to another Soul of an Empath podcast. My name is Tiffany Cano. Today we have Andrea Haley Shankaran, and she is an Ayurvedic nutrition coach. So I don't know about you, but I have always loved Eastern principles, Eastern medicine, Eastern philosophies, and Ayurveda comes from India, as far as I know. And so let me just share a little bit about Andrea so you can start to get to know her and love her the way I do. So she is a nutrition and digestive health coach. She's a teacher, community leader, creator of courses, protocols, and the tools that empower women to take control of their eating and their health, which you and I know that we have the power to do that if we so choose.
Absolutely.
So she has helped hundreds of women eat well, live, feel, and have better results with her strategies using passion, compassion, using the wisdom of Ayurveda. And I look forward to having her as a guest today. Thank you.
Yay. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks, Tiffany. It's really, really, yeah, wonderful to be here.
So where did you learn about Ayurveda?
And interesting.
Like, what got you onto this journey?
Yeah. Very interesting. So I was around 21. I was just like anyone else, just doing my thing, living my life. And I decided to take a break from university and travel, just like many people do. Most people go to Europe. I went to Central America, traveling on like a shoestring budget, you know, local buses, like small towns, living with the locals. And I was a sensitive person who did not know it at the time. So I was encountering all these new and exciting and wild and unbelievably shocking things that I just didn't expect in the developing world. It's a very different culture and lifestyle. And I was just blown away. And I was particularly blown away by two things. The first thing was the people. You know, I sensed that the people were different. They were present. They were so present. They were so generous and giving. And did I mention present? Like, whoa. Humanity was like right in my face. And
yes.
It was like a lot to take in. And the other thing as we were traveling that was very apparent was the food and the fact that we were really just having available to us what was locally grown. And of course, then that was, you know, freshly prepared and cooked. And I was vegetarian at the time, so my diet was even a little more limited, you know, corn tortillas and fresh fruits and coconut bread made with coconut and fried bananas and cafe con leche, like just awesome stuff. But it was limited, in particular because I was vegetarian, and that kind of pronounced the fact. And there were no supermarkets around. And so somehow in my young mind, I connected these two together, humanity and simple, fresh food. So I had that.
Okay.
I had that.
Okay.
Yep. I had that, and I something really got triggered within me because I returned to Canada with this super bee in my bonnet, going like, there's something terribly wrong with the way we're living in Canada, where I'm from. Like, there's something wrong here. I don't know what it is, but I know that I cannot myself be like these people. I was acutely aware of the fact that I wasn't really feeling like I could speak my truth. And the way I understood it at the time was match my mind and my heart. I couldn't say what was really in my heart. I couldn't be the way these people were. I couldn't be that present. I couldn't be that authentic. And I realized it was because I couldn't even be that way with myself. So I chose very consciously at the time to start looking within. And, you know, that was kind of like my spiritual awakening, you know, that whole experience. So here I was looking within and I was, you know, searching for something. And that's when I happened at a bookstore and this book, you know, literally fell off the shelf. It was called...
I love it when that happens.
Yep. And I was dealing at that time with all of these questions. You know, I think the first thing on anyone's spiritual journey, if they really stop and start examining their own thoughts and their own self, it can be pretty horrifying. Like
see what's underneath and in our shadow. Yes. And our subconscious mind is, you know, we've had a long time and I believe lifetimes of buildup, right?
Exactly.
To help us be the positive, empowering things that we are, as well as build up some of that negative karma from the lack of virtues that we may have had over the lifetimes. And and it takes a lot of bravery. It takes, I think, in addition to the willingness, is having that self-compassion and self-love when it is that you're ready to look.
But
you know, go on and continue. I just felt like our fellow empaths need that gentle, loving reminder to be more tender with yourself when you're doing, you know, the peek under the covers and see what is, you know, blocking you from whatever goal or achievement or beingness that you're seeking.
Yeah. And I think you're alluding to the fact that it can feel even more intense and more horrifying because you are a sensitive person, right? More so than someone who's not sensitive. So it takes even more courage and more gentleness. And so, yeah, I was in a state where, you know, I was just full of questions. I seriously did not know how to live. I didn't know what to do with my life. I had dropped out of school. I had become completely disillusioned with everything. I felt like people would never make the right choice when it came to important matters, and that within the system, that's the way it was. And so I felt like looking within was going to actually be more valuable. I literally thought more valuable than if I found the cure for cancer. Like, that's how I was thinking. Like this is serious, because I knew that not everybody can do it. And I knew that I had that courage. So, you know, but here I was, a very, very beginning of my journey, and this book falls off the shelf, and it's called Life of Balance. And it was a book about Ayurveda, and I opened it up and it was a beautiful book about Ayurveda. The author just writing in poetry, almost talking about the connection between our food and cosmic memory and the divine, and, like, you know, the whole fabric of creation. And it's like I was reminded of what I knew when I was a young child. I used to see food on my plate and see it as different, as vibrant, as full of life, and just so amazing, like a miracle. And I think I connected that. And I was like, okay, food, that's it. Food, humanity in Central America, food, miracle, the divine. All right. Mm-hmm. So I was motivated to just start cooking. And that's what I did, is I just started cooking some of the recipes in the book. Mm-hmm. And then that's when things started to just open up and just completely change. And, you know, I remember just the discovery of, oh my goodness, like I'm expressing self-love through this process. I'm choosing, yes, beautiful foods. And in that process, I'm showing respect, self-respect for myself by choosing these quality foods that are going to nourish and nurture me. And nourishment, that was a huge thing, like nourishing parts of me that I didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, my mom, she always cooked, but she didn't enjoy cooking. And so as a sensitive person, you're eating that energy all the time. And so you're not nurtured.
There's a few of my family members who love cooking, and then some who hate cooking. And the ones who love cooking, there is an energetic vibration of love and nurturing that is woven into whatever it is that they make. And
absolutely.
And I enjoy their food. You know, there's something just so, such a feeling of love woven in. And, you know, you also have sought out Ayurvedic recipes and cooking to help with emotional healing. It wasn't just like a physical vitality and expansion of consciousness, but like for healing stress and anxiety. So can you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So when you talked about the love in the food, that's actually explained in Ayurveda. You know, everything is energy. And so indeed, you're literally changing the vibration and the energy of the food when you're approaching it in that way. That's part of what I, you know, what I do, what I'm about, and what I started doing. But in terms of, so there's another principle about balance. And so in Ayurveda, we talk about six tastes. So there's sweet, sour, salty, bitter, pungent, and astringent. And so if you can get a balance of these six tastes in your dish, then your food is completely satisfying when you eat it. It can be so satisfying, it almost feels blissful. And I'm sure you've had that experience with a beautifully balanced meal before.
Right? Yes, but I think it's been more on the rare side to get all six of those yummy flavors together. I feel like at least the American diet focuses on like one or two for the whole course, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I still feel hungry. I feel unsatisfied. I feel like I'm missing something. So I really want you to cook for me. I want the access to all six flavors in one meal.
Well, you can learn to do it yourself. It's not that difficult. And so, you know, it's the process of nurturing that. And that's what I did. And, you know, the process is very simple. Like, just understand what's in those categories, prepare your meal, and then sit down and just run through them. Can I taste the sweet? Can I taste the salt? Can I taste the sour? Can I taste the bitter? Can I taste the astringent? Can I taste the pungent? And if something's missing, you go back and you get something with that taste and you add it. And this is literally what I did to learn. And you will notice the differences between like night and day. You know, the food goes from like, to like, wow. And so what's happening is that complete satisfaction that I should say, it's a complete satisfaction of not just like you mentioned, the desires, right? Like when something's missing, you literally are left wanting or craving. And that's what a big source of food cravings. Mm-hmm. It's also your mental and emotional balance. right? So that balanced flavor, that balanced food nurtures balance within all the parts of you, even your energy bodies. And so for me, learning this, it just naturally came to be that food became foundational to my, you know, overall health.
Mm-hmm.
And it nurtures it every day.
Emotional, spiritual, physical health, like everything. On all levels. And yeah, I mean, I think I crave mostly sweet and salty.
Yeah.
But there are some Indian meals that I've had, because I mean, I love Indian food, that I think that probably does get me the most variety of flavors in the same meal. And I really look forward to learning how to do this. I know you have programs and courses that you teach people. You do like live cooking demos where we get to like cook with you. And
yes,
and I'm totally going to do that. And I encourage all of you who are listening to definitely explore what that could look like, because I'm one of those that I don't really like cooking. But I, you know, there's sometimes I can feel like an inspiration and enjoy it. And for certain people I enjoy cooking for, but as a general thing, I don't love it. And I definitely don't love the cleaning afterwards. And so I try to trick myself and like pick a quality or remember that I'm doing this as an act of love and devotion to God and to the divinity within me. And then somehow that helps to like shift my attitude a bit.
That's a really great idea. Yeah. There's a lot of reasons why people don't enjoy cooking. But I think, yeah, people look at me and they're like, oh, Andrea loves to cook. But actually Andrea loves what she gets as a result. And Andrea loves showing that love and self-respect and that nourishment and feeling mostly that connection. It's the way that I connect to the divine. And so, yeah, it has become kind of a spiritual path. And so if you can connect to your food in that way, and it doesn't have to be to the extent that I've done it, but I think it can change everything about how you feel about cooking. And hopefully learning some of these things and, and incorporating them into your life, you'll find that you're more inspired and even compelled, you know, to do that work. And another important thing that I really emphasize for people is set aside the time to cook. Don't try to do it in a hurry. Because, you know, the food's not going to end up good. It's just not. And you know, don't do it when you're not feeling like doing so. Like getting that feeling is important because it won't turn out good and it won't nurture you.
So like actually schedule it on the calendar.
That's exactly what I'm talking
a
about.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner break. What?
Yes.
Where you're not multitasking at the same time.
I'm excited here. Because, and I'm going to like maybe blow your mind here, but this can be your self-care time. Because that's the difference. If you're trying to do it when you're hurrying, you're like, I'm trying to fit it in, that's completely different from I'm doing this and I have the time and space, I've scheduled it, and now it's nurturing. Now you've changed the energy and you've opened up, you know, creativity and exploration and everything. And so I spend 1.5 to 2 hours on my lunch. Yes, I know.
Okay.
Okay.
I know in Italy, like we end up eating for 2 or 3 hours for lunch, but here in America, if most people eat at their freaking desks, you know, or like take a, you know, a 15 minute and then like hurry back to work. So tell us why lunch is that important to you. Like I've heard you say that lunch is like the most important meal of the day. Why is that?
So first of all, I want people to understand that I am a very busy online entrepreneur. I get a lot of things done every day. I'm very efficient. I'm very focused. I'm like task oriented. I'm a doer. Okay. So I don't want you to think that I'm like, you know, have all the time on my hands and I'm spending this time on lunch. But here's what happens. I get up in the morning. I do some work. You know, I have my morning routine, whatever, do some work, have some breakfast, and then continue working. And what happens is the stress, the decisions, the questions, the I gotta do's, the to-do's, they just build up over the course of the morning, right? The stress level starts to rise. Mm-hmm. And I can only take so much stress as a sensitive person before it sets me off kilter. I just can't handle a certain level. And so that break for lunch, when I walk into the kitchen, cuts that buildup of stress. And so I make lunch be literally a cut break. And so prepare the food, cook the food, eat the food, and then rest after eating. Very, very important. If I don't take that rest, if I don't take my time to eat, if I don't rest, then everything is different after that because the stress has not been, I call it tamped down. The stress has not been brought back to balance.
What do you mean by rest? Like, I know in Latin countries, it's a siesta. And in Italy, it's like, just like talking and hanging out and being social and doing nothing, you know?
Right, right.
To me, rest could equal a nap or a meditation. What does rest mean to you after you eat lunch?
Yeah. So it's sitting. And yeah, I have a bad habit. I watch TV a little bit because it clears my mind away from other things. It just cuts me off from my work. I also go out into the garden and maybe water some plants and just, you know, get outside, sit on the chaise lounge, enjoy the sun, watch the trees and the birds, about 15, 20 minutes. And that is critical because what happens during that time too, is that you allow your body to take in that food and engage in the digestive process. You know, digestion's like a symphony orchestra. It's very complicated. The body has to like figure out with, in terms of what you've eaten, what kind of enzymes and what steps, what to do first and like how to coordinate all of that. And that's what's happening when you're resting. And then you'll almost feel it if you're tuned in. It's like, okay, that's plugged in, digestion's on. And now you want to kind of get up. And yeah, that's when like walking around the garden, watering, maybe just tidying up the kitchen. By the way, I don't do dishes at lunchtime. I save them for later in the day. So that is a time-saving trick during the day. But then, yeah, you come back, I come back, and I'm fully rested and ready to just continue and tackle and work like, you know, the next stint, being highly productive and efficient. And again, if I do not do that, I will literally come back later in the day for the rest and relaxation that I didn't get.
And what about people who don't work from home and they have to like go somewhere for their job? What do you give as advice for that to make lunch still a priority?
Yes. So it can be really helpful to bring your own food. So that saves the time having to walk and go somewhere to buy food. And that food that you cooked yourself is going to be infinitely more nurturing and nourishing for you, even if it's a leftover that you're heating up. And so you take that and you go into your lunchroom or your space, maybe you heat it up, take it outside, and you sit there and just take as much time as you possibly can and sit with the food. Like when I used to, you know, be at, you know, in that situation, people would come into the kitchen and I would be eating, you know, I would be focused kind of on eating, some light conversation, but really paying attention to what I was doing with the food. That's important, right? You don't want to be like highly distracted and just, that's the problem with sitting in front of the computer. Especially in front of the computer, you've got work things that are calling your name. It's like, that's, you know, it's one thing to be watching something like TV or something light or a video or, you know, something, you know, that's kind of relaxing, but it's another thing to be doing work. That's, yeah, don't do that. So because your body, like same thing, you need to focus. Your body needs to focus on the food and the digestion. Otherwise you're operating in flight or fight. Mm-hmm. And it's, and in that state, you can't digest. So then what will happen is later in the day, you'll start to feel uncomfortable. You know, your digestive enzymes will be like working, your fluids will be all like out of sorts, toxins will be building up. And that's when you're craving now coffee, sweets, all kinds of food cravings and snacks, you know, in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And it's a direct consequence of not taking that break at lunch.
Interesting. And I know we're starting to get close on time here, but I have another burning question. And that is, so for someone who has a physical or a psychological health ailment, I know it, in at least Chinese medicine, we would eat the foods that would nurture or bring back into balance a particular ailment. Like if someone has a lot of dampness, which I do, you know, like we would eat foods that are more drying, maybe have a little spice in it. Stay away from things like sweets and dairies. And so in Ayurveda, I know that there's a balancing component and also looking at people's doshas, which you can explain briefly what that is as well. Talk to us a little bit about how Ayurveda works for health ailments.
Yeah. So you're talking about now the clinical side of Ayurveda and kind of the science of Ayurveda. It's the part that unfortunately people get stuck on when they kind of start to explore Ayurveda, because it takes a little bit of knowledge there. But the basic first step is to understand your body type or your dosha. And there's three main body types. One is light and airy. It's air and ether element. So this person is light. This person is dry. This person is kind of rough. This person is easily stimulated. Okay. It's the person who never is able to gain weight. They might actually be underweight. And then there's the fire dosha, which is pitta. And this is the digestive enzymes, the bile, all the chemical reactions in the body. This is your A-type personality. You're passionate, focused, you know, tendency to anger and frustration. It's like, oh, you know, the tiger, that's your pitta type, your classic. And then you've got kapha, which is the earth element. And that's, I think, what you were describing from the Chinese medicine perspective. And yes, Ayurveda is very, you know, very similar. And so here you have heavy, dark, dull, sticky, gooey, and wet. Yes. So in Ayurveda, we first of all, everything is described in terms of qualities. So, you know, your body type might have an excess of certain qualities based on your body type. Now you want to look at the foods and the lifestyle practices and even the mental functions and the emotions. They all can be described in terms of qualities. So, and these qualities in Ayurveda exist as a set of opposites, right? So if you have a lot of hot, you add cold. If you have a lot of dry, you add moisture. If you have a lot of light, you add heavy, and vice versa. So you identify the foods and the lifestyle practices and approaches to life that are the opposites that will help to bring back your balance. And ideally, you want to reach your balanced doshic state. And that's where you will feel most at ease. Balance in Ayurveda is the definition of optimal health.
And what about for people who have two doshas? How do you bring into balance? You're giggling. That way? Because, you know, I met with an Ayurvedic person like 7 to 10 years ago, and they said I was kapha pitta.
Yes.
So what about that situation?
I know it gets a little bit more challenging. So all of the foods and the lifestyle practices, et cetera, usually have two qualities. So it's like hot and dry, right? Or it's hot and heavy. And so now you kind of have to do a little bit of which qualities are going to be the best for that particular dosha. The other thing is you want to look at the symptom or the thing you're trying to treat and kind of focus on that. So an Ayurvedic treatment plan might have like 10 points of treatment and it might have steps. And so you address sort of one thing first, free up the body's natural healing resources, and then move on to the next thing. The other thing is seasonal component. So right now we're in Pitta season. And so you would want to be more mindful if you're a dual dosha of the Pitta aggravating factors during Pitta season.
Summer season.
Summer. Summer is hot, right? So hot is hot is Pitta. Yeah. And so it takes a little bit of work and guidance. And the whole practice is to build your self-awareness of qualities and how different things are affecting you. And, you know, I don't want to make it difficult. You can, with a little bit of experience, you'll be able to tune in and kind of use your intuition to choose the things that are going to be balancing. Of course, identify the shadow spots where you're making the wrong choices, which we also do. But it is a balancing act, and it does take a little bit of time to learn. So Ayurveda is very much a lifestyle. And it's a beautiful lifestyle because I feel it infuses joy into the life, and it's just about daily living and how to optimize that. So you can take joy in everything if you change your mindset towards it. Mm-hmm. Like I take joy in vacuuming. Vacuuming is it's exercise. It's exercise. And I do it at a time when I know that exercise is going to be beneficial to me. Mm-hmm. So it's like you get better and better at it. It's like a practice in a way.
And it doesn't, just for those who are still new to even the term yes. Ayurveda, that doesn't necessarily mean eating Indian food. It means eating a balanced blend of different types of food. And so you don't have to be worried that you can't ever have American food. You know, it's more of a matter of blending certain fruits and vegetables and seasonings that will give you that balance for optimal health and vitality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you want to learn more, definitely pick up Andrea's free gift, which she's going to talk about in a minute, and also seek her out for her cooking classes and her Ayurvedic cooking programs. I mean, she has online courses as well as like live and interactive. So because I know I need that external motivation to want to cook.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm going to need some handholding, and I'm going to go through and learn more how to do it with her holding my hand. It's not that I can't do it. Like I can do it. Totally. I just don't want to do it. So the way that I'm going to engage in self-care is by saying, okay, hold my hand through this and we'll cook together.
Yes. And that's exactly what we do in the classes. So a lot of cooking classes are just demonstration, but I actually send out the recipes. I talk about substitutions. I give links on where to buy things. I explain anything that's new in terms of ingredients, and we don't do too many at a time. And then we cook together and you get the result. You get to taste the six flavors, you get to experience it. And, you know, my students find that to be a very different experience. And then they come back again and again, customize, make things their own, build up their skills and knowledge. So I'm so happy you're joining us and, that you're going to be learning. I really commend you for that. And I hope it's going to be wonderful for you.
Thank you so much. And tell us about your free gift.
Yeah. So anyone who got excited by this and is ready to learn and actually do some cooking, the gift is called How to Make Khichdi in 5 minutes. It is not a 5-minute video. It is a 1-hour video because I go, It doesn't mean that it takes 1 hour to make khichdi. It literally does take 5 minutes to make this comfort food, meatless meal. Customize it in any which way for yourself. Learn the basic kind of foundational, you know, ingredients in Ayurveda, like ghee and basmati rice and mung dal, but you can also customize. You don't have to have rice. You can have quinoa. So that's what the video is about. The video is about the customizations and the variations and teaching you about the various ingredients, and then full demo on exactly how to do it, how to make this dish. Recipe. I even include seasonal customization so you can walk yourself through the seasons just by changing up this one dish. It can literally be life-changing. That's what people have told me. So,
so make wonderful.
Sure you guys check that out.
Mm-hmm. And what's the link to that? Or if you don't have it handy, I will for sure put it in the show notes for people, but
have to put it in the show notes because it's not easy to call out.
Okay, yeah. No problem. So thank you very much for inspiring me personally, and hopefully our listeners as well, to explore eating healthily, eating a more balanced, nurturing, joy-filled, loving way. And in this case, with Ayurveda. And thanks for bringing joy into cooking for me. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
All right. Much love, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Soul of an Empath with Tiffany Cano. If you enjoyed this show, please rate and recommend it on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you are listening to it. You can get more information from soulofanempath.com. May you be blessed with love, health, peace, joy, spiritual oneness, prosperity, and abundance. So be it. So be it. So be it.